Hello, I'm India, and welcome to Start a Ripple, the podcast that celebrates moving in nature. You see, I believe that ripples are made when we connect movement with nature, not only for the mind and body, but also the environment too. And I can't believe we're in the fifth series already of this podcast. So thank you to everybody who has followed the podcast, and I can't wait to share with you the episodes I've recorded for this series. Okay. It's time to introduce this week's guest. Cher Hart is a very well-respected osteopath who specialises in women's health, chronic pain and stress illness recovery. After a terrible few months in 2018, Cher found therapy in play outside and talks to me about how it helped the trauma to flow through and out. Cher speaks to me from the bottom of her heart and dives into why play outside is now her daily non-negotiable. Hi Cher, welcome to the Start a Ripple podcast.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
Ah, it's great having you. I was just saying earlier, I love having local people on the podcast. So we only live not that far away from each other. And obviously you work in Folkestone, so I'm really excited to chat and find out a little bit more about you, because I know you as an osteopath, but don't know much more. So
thank you for having me,
as well as obviously the listeners who maybe don't know you. So on that note, where did your ripples start, if you could tell us a little bit about your background?
Big question. I guess for me, my biggest passion is being human, interacting with humans. My passion for the human body started as a kid. I adored anatomy. It was my favourite book as a kid. Was a Reader's Digest thick anatomy book, and I loved it. I'm the youngest of four, so I would just lay my siblings down on the floor and poke and prod bits of muscles that I would look at in my book. And that eventually led me to training to be an osteopath at 18 and to where I am now. So that has been my passion lifelong, really, to understand the human mind and body and how they interact together.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing that you had that kind of that just desire from such a young age, you know?
Yeah, I feel really fortunate actually, because I always knew that I wanted to work in this world, in this realm, and there was never a question for me of what do I want to be when I'm older. It was always I'm gonna do this. And thankfully it's worked out.
Yeah, because so many of us, I mean me included, have come, you know, you sort of go down all different lines of work. And it's funny when you were saying that you had this like an encyclopedia that you referred to, and that was like your Bible almost. Like when I was younger, I was obsessed with dogs, and I had the ultimate book of dogs, which was one of the Joan Kingsley books. Yeah. And I was obsessed with it. I knew everything about it. Now I'm thinking I've taken the wrong career choice. It becomes like, I don't know, a dog breeder or something. Anyway.
Well, you have a dog. You get to meet other dogs. So it's still a very enriching part of your life. And it's never too late. I mean, there's joy to be had in always knowing what you've wanted to do. And there's also joy to be had in exploring. And this is what we're going to be talking about today, is playfulness. And people get to explore all sorts of avenues. And there's joy to be had in both. And there's no right or wrong way. But yeah, there's just two different approaches, and I took one route.
I'm excited to find out more about that. Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to take you back to 2018, because from what I understand is that was a bit of a tough year for you, and I guess it sets us up probably for what we'll continue to talk about for the rest of the episode. But if you don't mind revisiting that year for us and kind of like explaining how it impacted your life.
So 2018, my husband and I, we'd only been married a few months when he found a lump and was then subsequently diagnosed with, after you know, a long wait, which wasn't helpful, which added to the stress of the situation. Eventually diagnosed with testicular cancer. And then again, another while of waiting, had surgery to remove it. And thankfully it hadn't spread anywhere. And so it was contained, and that was the effectively the cancer dealt with within a few months. However, as a result of that, he developed very, very crippling anxiety, really acute life-altering anxiety. The experience that he had gone through, I mean, every experience is relative, right? So for somebody else having had a type of cancer where if you're going to get cancer, get testicular cancer, because 98% survival rate, it's, you know, it's survivable cancer. So for somebody who'd only had experience of that type of cancer, perhaps, or no cancer in the family, that would have been, you know, a stressful situation, but it wouldn't have caused as much trauma as it did for my husband. He unfortunately has a long family history of cancer and no surviving members who have had cancer. Cancer for him always led to the worst situation, which was death. So for him, he very much associated his diagnosis with, well, I'm going to die. And it was awful just to see him be lost to this crippling anxiety. And even after the surgery, it, you'd think it would perhaps be eased, but it really wasn't. It was as soon as he was given the news that, well, the next day after he was given the news that, yeah, it hasn't spread anywhere, your scans are all clear. He said he was sat at work at his desk and he just felt this cold wave come over him and just a curtain of doom descend over him, and he was so frightened, he didn't know what it was. And yeah, that was the start of the rest of the journey. So the cancer itself was only really, I don't really remember time-wise, but 6 to 8 weeks. And then the following 18 months was just trying to get him out of this incredibly difficult mental health period. Amongst that time, so a few months, just a couple of months after his surgery, part of the process of helping him heal and feel better was playing, and we'll come to that later. We were playing in the woods and just a freak accident, I broke my leg, which wasn't helpful being in the middle of the woods. Either of us had our phones on us, and you know, I had to crawl, he had to give me a piggyback. We had to go to the, thankfully there was a nearby old people's home where we could just ask somebody for help. They gave us a lift home and, you know, eventually got to the hospital. And then a few weeks after that, our beloved cat got killed on the road. And that was just another, you know, what else can happen that is going to be, you know, hitting us. So those things in isolation aren't great, but it just seemed to be one thing after another that was just hitting us wave after wave of how much more can we tolerate. Yeah, and it was just an incredibly, incredibly difficult period of having to be strong for my husband. He relied on me. I was his lifeline. I was, because I'm in the medical field, I have access to knowledge that perhaps isn't so widely known about how to help him through this, and helping him, giving him advice, being his coach, being his emotional support, being his wife, being all of these different things to him. And yeah, just incredibly difficult. Not that I would admit it at the time, because you just have to do what you need to do to get through it. Anyhow, after 18 months or thereabouts, he finally had reached the point where he could say out loud, he had this thing about jinxing himself. He's finally said, I'm okay now, I'm doing all right now, aren't I? And I said, yeah, you are. You know, you've had a really good few weeks, you haven't had any episodes or setbacks, and you're in a good place. And it was that very next day, 3 a.m, wide awake, I woke up with racing heart, my own time to crumble was allowed to happen because my husband had said, I'm okay. And it was amazing how my body, my mind wouldn't let that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry if I get upset. When he needed me, it was when he had reached a point of being okay that my system was like, okay, now you have some stuff to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really tough because in that sort of period as well, I had a death in the family and stress in the family going on. So again, it was just like another washing machine, tumble dryer of emotion and stress and all of this being stirred up.
Like a feeling of almost like backwards somersaulting through water and not being able to come up for air.
Yeah, absolutely.
Being hit again. Okay, here we go.
Absolutely. The way I likened it at the time was my husband was drowning at sea and I had to summon all my strength to get him to shore.
Mm-hmm.
And then you only realize once you're on shore and safe how bloody tired you are.
Mm. And that you've swallowed a load of water as well.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So when I really noticed it, I'd been ignoring it for some time, just trying to push through, not following my own advice at all, because when do we ever?
Mm-hmm.
I finally noticed it when we, thankfully, the timing couldn't have been better. We had a holiday booked to Slovenia, which is the most beautiful country I've ever been to. And we were meeting my uni friends out there who were just, you know, my family, my heart friends, I like to call them. They're just, you know, your people. And I was trying to pack for this holiday. And for hours, I didn't realize what time had been. It had been hours. All I'd managed to pack in the suitcase was a pair of shoes and a snorkel. And we were going to a lake. Like, you don't snorkel in a lake. And I just could not figure out how to pack for a holiday. It was just complete shutdown. And it was frightening because I just couldn't string two thoughts together. And I thought, my God, something is really wrong here. And that's when I could finally see just how crashed I was, how burnt out I was. And that, yeah, thankfully we eventually managed to, my husband came home from work and helped us pack. Got to Slovenia, which was just the most perfect place to be in the midst of that personal crisis. That was 2018/19 in a nutshell.
Wow. I mean, thank you for sharing that, and thank you so much, because I'm kind of like downloading that all now, and I can totally understand. And it is amazing how the body does, it's that sort of fight or flight mode, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And you had to fight, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, as soon as you were given the opportunity to let go, how that mm-hmm. affected your mind and your physical body.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's incredible, isn't it? So during the hard time, were you able to access any of your sort of tools, or had you learned what tools you needed to get through that period, or was it afterwards that you found what you needed to get through those hard times?
It was both. So during my husband having his period of real difficulty, again, I was his coach. I was finding things that would help us. Right, let's do yoga, let's meditate. You're going on probiotics, we're changing our diet, we're going whole foods, only whole foods. And it was a complete lifestyle change, and that was easy to implement because you're just so wanting somebody to get better that when you're doing it for somebody else, it's I went into work mode and I was treating him like I would a patient. How can we get you better? What things can we try that would really help you? Which was complex when it's just also your husband and there's no downtime away from it. But yeah, I really encouraged him to get outside more. Even when the idea of going outside, he couldn't face it. It was, no, come on, we got to go out. We live in the countryside. We live in the woods. There are fields around us. We don't need to see anybody. Let's go to the field. Just shout. Shout out all of your fear. Shout out your frustration. Let's stomp around. Literally stomp in the mud. Let's climb trees. Let's splash in water. Let's just get outside. So there was that. There was also integrating play. So balancing along branches, climbing trees, hopping from, you know, rock to rock, that kind of thing. And he really didn't feel like it sometimes. You know, it's hard enough to get out of the house. It's hard enough to even just walk. And he, you know, I'm asking him to jump around and act like a kid. And of course he didn't feel like it. But with just enough nudging, sometimes he would do it and it did the trick. It would get him out of a funk enough to then be able to appreciate the walk and take in a bit of the goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Did
that come from your kind of scientific research that you'd done as a student or whatever, or did that just come innately from you, that you just had this feeling of, I think we need to go out in nature and we need to play and let's see that?
Again, I think both. The drive to be out in nature is so primal. It's you just know you feel good from it, and how can you not? But this was the difficulty. I remember one instance in particular. There was the most incredible sunset, and you know, when you see a sunset that's glorious, you can't help but admire it. And I thought that of course he would want to as well. But when I turned to look at him, he just looked so fraught with anguish because he could not appreciate the sunset, and he didn't know why. I don't give a toss about that. I just want to be home. I don't care. And that cycle of thoughts of why don't I care about anything that's nice and beautiful was just terrifying for him. So sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. But also from work, I'm interested in various different approaches, and I'd seen a TED talk a long time ago about play, adult play, and the importance of it for mental health and well-being. And so yeah, just the primal urge to get out in nature mixed with play and the scientific aspect of it was what drove that.
Because I've heard you just, or seen you describe it on social media, as plays magic for our brains.
Yeah.
And yeah, I love that. What is the science behind it?
It's huge. So play is, it's defined as a pleasurable activity which is apparently purposeless. So you're doing it for the sheer joy of doing it for no other reason other than because you want to, because it's fun. It's so interesting with play. The absence of play, even in adulthood, is really linked to poor health, poor mental health. Think of, you know, a CEO who's constantly working however many hours a week and doesn't have any time for play. And play can be anything you enjoy. It can be movement, it can be reading, it can be jigsaws, it can be anything that, again, that's just done for the sake of doing it. If an adult doesn't have any of that in their life, and life is just work, it's just existence, what is there without joy? So play is incredibly powerful for our well-being. Play is one of the seven primal emotions that we are born with, that's hardwired into our brain. And these primal emotions, they're rage, fear, panic, seeking, care, lust, and play. So they're the seven primal emotions that drive us as humans as we develop, even into adulthood. The instinct to play is really built into our biology. We have things called play circuits in our brains that are there just waiting to be activated. The play circuit is when neurons in our brain are activated by things in our environment that we can interact with. That essentially is play. What is around me that I can interact with? And that could be anything from a ball or a puppy or a pen and paper, anything like that, a friend to chat with and joke with. Mm-hmm. And play is always done just for internal reward. That's the joy you get from it. It releases endorphins and dopamine and serotonin. It releases these amazing hormones that make us feel good with no sense of external reward. We're not doing it for prizes. We're not doing it for money. We're not doing it for any other gain other than to feel good. And there are various...
Sorry to interrupt.
That's okay.
No, so it's the difference between, I guess sports, isn't it? And play,
yeah.
Some fitness or sports is done because to win the match or to go for a run. So you look a certain way. There's a hidden agenda. It's not really hidden. It's not hidden. There's an agenda behind.
There's an ulterior motive. Yeah.
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 Exactly. And this is the difference. It's just been done for the pure joy.
Exactly that. Yeah, and there are various different types of play. There's object play, which is where you're interacting with an object, so puzzles or drawing. Creative play, which could be painting. There's types of play, which is baking or cooking. If you enjoy that and you're doing it again, you get food at the end of it. But if you're doing it for the process, for the joy of the process, that is play. Mm. For me personally, my favourite type of play is movement play. And movement is so powerful because it activates areas of the brain that are connected to learning and innovation and adaptability and resilience. So in terms of mental well-being and mental health and helping my husband and I recover from what we were going through, movement was huge. Being outside, playing, yoga, jumping around, shouting is also a physical activity. All of those things are incredibly important.
And so if someone's listening to this and going, hang on a moment, I don't have any play in my life, because I'm sure many people will be going, well, yeah, I go to work and I do go to the gym, and then I'll make myself dinner and watch TV and then go to bed. You start without realizing it, you haven't got it. How can you recommend how to invite it into your life to make it organic? Because I guess is it still play if you've factored it into your day?
Yeah, absolutely. Hugely. I like to, when I talk about this with my patients, I always reframe it in terms of gift yourself the time. It's not a chore. Gift yourself this moment, because it is a gift to yourself. You're allowing yourself that time to reconnect with yourself, to have that downtime, do something for joy. Where is your joy? If people miss joy, and by extension, if they're missing play, you can really tell. People seem down and they may have mental health conditions. There's obviously more to it than that, but it's a huge factor. If somebody is missing lightness and play and joy from their life, things seem heavier. Life feels heavier. So in terms of how to help people bring play into their life, the best thing is, think back to when you were a kid. What did you do as a kid that made you feel the most free, that made you feel joyful, that gave that fire in your belly that you couldn't help but want to run home from school and do? What did you become so absorbed in that you lost track of time? And that would be different for everybody. So it could be collecting things or being social with friends, being creative, moving, being in nature, playing with animals, reading, writing, exploring. It can be anything. Play is so, so broad. It's whatever brings you joy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's similar. I had one of my season one guests, Jo Mosley, spoke about this as well. And it's what she took her on her pathway. And now she's sort of very well known in the paddleboarding industry. And she's talks about, post-menopause. And she sort of shouts about all these sort of things. But she started by, she'd got divorced and she suddenly realized she had no play, and she went back to the beach that she went to as a child and just started splashing the waves. Amazing. And it just came, and she was like,
oh, it reignited.
Why did I stop this when it felt so good as a child? And so many of us do, don't we? There's a point in our lives, and I'm sure it must be around that sort of adolescence time when you start to, I guess, see the world looking at you rather than
absolutely
doing it yourself. Yeah.
There's that, as well as also the expectation. You know, school is so based on academia now. Mm. Where is the time for play when you're at senior school? Mm. Maybe in art class, maybe in home ec class if they still offer that.
You still come to get grades for it.
Exactly. There's always an ulterior motive to it.
Yeah.
And same in adulthood. A lot of the time we feel that we always have to be productive. Mm-hmm. Productivity is king.
Mm.
Why? And this is the paradox of play. This is what's so amazing. With play, if you give yourself time to play, you actually end up being more productive because the brain has its downtime. Play is enabling learning. It's enabling these beautiful neurons to fire together. That if you're really struggling with an idea, if you're struggling with work, if you're struggling to make a decision, go and play. Give yourself that downtime. Give yourself some movement. Jump around. Put on your favorite song. Dance like an idiot. Giving your brain that break just to have some joy. Mm-hmm. It's amazing the impact it can have on being able to think more clearly or being able to come to a decision. That's the paradox of play. Play is done. It's a thing done with no purpose that actually gives you more purpose.
Yes, absolutely. And so do you then yourself make sure that you have X amount of time playing every day?
Yeah, for me it's my non-negotiable. Again, this is a concept I talk about with my patients. What for you is your non-negotiable? Is it time to read? Is it time in a bath? Is it talking to a friend? For me, my non-negotiable is going out in nature. I'm lucky enough to live in an area surrounded by beauty, so I can. If I'm away and I can't get out in nature, I have to play. And that could be if, for example, I'm in London on a course, I will find something to balance on. So I'll balance on a wall or do some movement in my room, just flow. I call it the flow. You just move how your body wants to move. Exactly. Yeah. Move how your body wants to move. And it could be, you know, called a yoga move, it could be called a stretch, it's whatever. It's just intuitive movement. It's embodying how you feel. It's coming into your body. It's mindful movement. So that for me is my non-negotiable.
Yeah. And I'm curious, because you've spoken about your patients that come to you, so I'm guessing many of your patients come to you, as you're an osteopath, come to you and they don't expect that's what you're going to be saying to them, because they're coming to say, I've got this problem with my body. Obviously, I know you work a lot in pelvic health and whatever it might be, and then you reply saying something like that. So could you go dive in a little bit more into your work as an osteopath and how you end up integrating this idea of playing and being outdoors in nature? Patients.
So huge question. Essentially, there's a big, I don't know if it's a misconception or a misunderstanding, people just don't know. that pain doesn't always mean something is damaged. Mm. When people come to me and their back hurts or their knee hurts or they have headaches, they always think, what's wrong with my back? Why am I in pain? Something's broken. I've been told my pelvis is out. I've had this x-ray done or this MRI done. And pain is not as simple as that. Pain is very, very complex. And trying to put this in a nutshell, pain essentially is a message that the brain is interpreting signals from the body constantly, just as it interprets signals from our environment, internal and external stimulus. Our brain interprets through a lens of, is this safe? Am I okay? Or am I not safe? Do I need to do something about it? When we're stressed, emotional stress, physical stress, our brains become wired to read these signals coming from our body and from our environment through a lens of not safe, through a lens of threat. When the brain is reading that threat or the input that it determines is threatening, pain is an output to say, hey, I need to do something about this. Have some pain to make you aware that I'm not happy. So if somebody's very stressed, their brain could be interpreting these signals of how to make you aware of it by giving you some back pain, waking up that old injury that you had when you were 20. Hey, this is a sensitive area. Now you're 40, you're looking after parents, you're looking after kids, you've got stress at work, you've got all these X, Y, Z things to do. Here's some back pain just to let you know that you need a bit of a break. That's it in a nutshell. Mm. Pain is complex, but so when people come to see me and I talk about stress a lot, and one of the big things is, okay, your body is letting you know something. Mm-hmm. Let's listen to it. Where is your joy? Where can you have more joy? Let's help you feel safe with movement again. And a lot of my sessions are movement, and it's playing with movement, and it's teaching their brain that they can move and it doesn't have to be painful. With the right input and with the right encouragement, you're telling the brain, this area is safe. You don't need to worry about this. Yeah, there's other things happening in your life. The world is a bit threatening, but right now in this moment, you can move and it's okay. Mm. That then eventually translates into their wider life. If they integrate the principles that we talk about, they can then go through their daily life with these principles and feel much more comfortable and learn to deal with the stress so that it doesn't impact their bodies in the way that it had been doing.
So interesting. From a personal perspective, I'm in the midst of moving house and my husband's just heading up his job and he's a bit burnt out with it. And in the last few days, I have felt this pain coming up my back. Mm-hmm. And it's really because we have a mutual friend, Mark, who is an osteo. And I messaged Mark today and I said, next time I see you, can you please have a little like look at my back, because I'm starting to, I don't know what it like. I'm starting to feel things, and I'm thinking, is it because I'm carrying my daughter on that side? Mm. But it's probably because I've been holding on to a lot of stress the last few weeks.
Exactly. So you hold your daughter on that side, which is relevant.
Yeah.
Because there is going to be a bit of extra muscle tension on that side, but without this external stress, your body reads that muscle tension and says, yeah, it's a bit tighter, but that's okay. Mm. Because there's other things going on. The lens of threat is bigger.
Mm.
The body then reads that muscle tension and says, oh, okay, this is a bigger deal than I thought it was. And it then creates pain as an output to let you know.
And because it's been such a wild time, I have not had time for play.
Mm-hmm.
I have been making, I mean, my non-negotiable is going for a walk outside. I have to do that every day. But I have a dog, so I also have to do it in a different respect.
Yeah.
And I like walked her today and I was like, oh, I have to take you out. Right. Okay, we've got half an hour. Right, Tiggs, come on, we're gonna power it. And I wasn't in my head, like, yeah, I'm doing my walk. but I wasn't doing my walk how I
it wasn't
doing my yeah. walk, which is very
it wasn't mindful. A mindful walk. Yes,
exactly. It was like, yeah. let's get this done because a dog is going to mm-hmm. be falling out the walls otherwise.
Yeah.
And that's so interesting because, mm. yeah, I, the last few weeks it's been either we're painting the house, I'm at work, I'm with, you know, looking after my daughter. And there hasn't been that time for play. And it's gosh, yeah, you've like opened my mind. Whoever's listening right now, I was thinking, oh my goodness, that could be why, you know?
Yeah. Yeah,
I want to go out and one of my favorite types of play and one that I go back to as a child is like rock climbing, not like officially yeah. rock climbing,
clambering. Yeah,
clambering, yes, like scrambling on the rocks, yes. like that period, that space between the Warren and Folkestone,
absolutely,
where if the tide is out, it is one of the best kind of scrambles in yes. the world. I yes. love it, and it just because you have to focus very much so you don't obviously place your foot wrong, and there's all different levels, and it feels very primal actually. Yeah, I think your yeah. hands, foot, you know, on all fours a lot of the time.
Yeah. You can't help but be mindful in that moment.
Yeah,
this is why my favorite type of movement play is balance play. Mm. I love it, and it's not just great for your mind, but also rehab. When I'm rehabbing my patients, got to make it a game, got to make it playful, because otherwise it's boring. What can we turn into a game? How can we integrate this into your life that will get you doing it? We've got to make it fun. Yeah, so absolutely, that's its own form of therapy, is movement therapy.
Yeah. And when I think of another thing, when I take my daughter to a little forest school, and she's not quite old enough yet to want to do this, but I look at the children who are about 2 or 3 years old. So yeah, and they're a little bit more on their feet. And there's loads of stations where they can do all this stuff, painting, whatever. But there's this massive, great big falling down tree, and all of them every yeah. week just want to walk along up and down this tree. I mean, they could do it all day long. I don't really think. And you know, it's not even anything anybody's set up. It's just there.
And exactly, it's perfect.
Yeah,
it's again living where I live, near the woods, near the fields, especially after Storm Eunice last year. Mm. It's my favorite thing, is just scrambling in trees. I love it.
That's incredible. Oh yeah.
And people worry about looking childish. And I get that. I went to Flip Out last week and I just didn't care about my inhibitions. I was running around like a kid. And somebody might say, oh, you know, 34-year-old woman being very childish. It's like, no, I'm being childlike. It's childlike wonder. It's loving how the body feels when you're moving it. It's being joyful in movement. Mm-hmm. It's childlike wonder at the little things. And that is so, so powerful.
Yeah. But I think, you know, society that's putting pressure on us not to do that. If you look at many animals, they still keep a dog, for example, will still be very much like a puppy until it's old. It doesn't lose that feeling of wanting to chase squirrels or
Absolutely.
Steal your socks or whatever. Obviously it might slow down a little.
They're still playful though. Yeah.
Still playful, and society frowns upon us if we it's very sad. And definitely bring back more play.
Well, this is the ripple. Let's play.
Yeah, absolutely. So speaking of which, there's a question that I ask all of my guests on this podcast. And I'm going to ask you. So looking back at the ripples you've made in your life, what are the biggest lessons that you have learned keeping your mind and body healthy?
Find your non-negotiable. Find what is your must have every day, and that will be different for everybody. So take stock of what is your joy, make it your non-negotiable, even if it's for 2 minutes, it'll make a difference to your day. Also, what I've learned through my work as well is the practice of embodiment and centering with the mind body. So awareness of where your mind is, awareness of how your body feels, accepting any sensations without judgment. They are what they are, and that's okay. And it's that brings messages of safety to your body, which again for the nervous system is beautiful, it's magic. The breath, slow down the breath, do a nice 3D breath. Beautiful for the body, beautiful for the mind and the way they work together. Centering, do some balance work, balance on the spot. See if you can soften any areas that feel tension. So again, that's great for keeping your body and mind well, is just that practice of awareness, acceptance, breath and centering as a little run through you can do. And a really simple thing to do is appreciate the small things. I'd mentioned it previously, childlike wonder. Be mindful of the world around you because it's so rich in joy and beauty. If you can just look at the small things. So when you're on a walk, you know, you're just speaking about you did your walk the other day that wasn't the walk you would usually do. Appreciate the small things. So listen to the birds. Feel the ground beneath your feet as you're walking. You know, I'm a proponent of minimalist footwear, so you can really feel the ground. Walk barefoot. I love to walk barefoot in the woods. Feel that texture. Feel the richness that the world has to offer. Watch the ants. Watch the birds. Look at the bark on the tree and how beautiful it is. Look at the sun shining through the leaves. Appreciate the texture of food, of water when you're washing up, the smell of laundry as you're folding laundry. It's just really being mindful in those moments, appreciating all the joy that the world has to offer. And the world becomes so rich in sensory stuff that you can't help but love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's a big thing.
Colourful, right?
Yeah, rich,
exciting.
Yes.
Oh, amazing. Oh, I feel like I could keep chatting. I want to find out more. This is such an enlightening conversation to have, and yeah, a really beautiful one as well. So thank you. And if anybody wants to follow you, find you, you know, work with you, how can they?
So I work at Grace Hill Studios. My business name is Live Well Osteopathy. So it's Live Well Osteopathy on Instagram and Facebook. And yeah, that's it.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Cher. It's been
a pleasure.
And yeah, I can't wait to go outside and play tomorrow. Yeah.
Let's play together sometime. Let's go and scramble.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Start a Ripple podcast. If you like what you heard, then please do write a review. It helps other like-minded souls find this podcast too. And if you want to get in touch, then the best way to speak to me is probably via Instagram. And my handle is @with_India. All right, take care and speak to you soon.